everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by nobody. I'm sorry. I had a guest coming. We had it all lined up, and it just kind of fell through here right at the very end. That's why, by the way, this is being released a little bit later than I would normally like. I kind of waited around to see if they could make it work. It turns out they could not, but we're working on getting them back on the show here in the next few weeks. By the way, over the next few weeks, we are starting to move into training camp and actual basketball to actually analyze. So as a result, and everybody's coming back from vacation, as a result, we're going to start working guests into the rotation here over the next few weeks and as we get ready for the season. So stay tuned for that. Today's show is actually an interesting one. I don't usually like the term narrative, or it's not necessarily that I don't like the term narrative. It's that for some reason recently it's become a pejorative word. It's been something that people use to criticize analysis, where instead of rebutting the analysis, it's, oh, this is just narrative, right? This is just narrative that the people who don't pay attention to the team. That's some of it. There's some truth to that criticism of some analysis. I'll grant you guys that when you guys bring that up. I don't really grant you that when you bring it up to me, because the idea that I'm not paying attention to this team is pretty funny. But you know, when there are national personalities offering up their analysis of what's going on around the Lakers, it's usually, you know, it's fairly obvious when Charles Barkley's talking out of his ass. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to predict some narratives as they pertain to the Lakers, whether it's with individual players, the team, the organization, all of that good stuff. I jotted down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 narratives. So I'll give the narrative and I will talk about the situation that might be going on in order for that narrative to be taking place and whether or not there might be truth to it, right? Because again, you know, even while national personalities might, you know, kind of fly off the handle with the easy narrative. Like, remember last year, the easy storyline was, well, the kids just aren't handling the trade rumors properly. They need to mature. They need to get themselves ready to play on a nightly basis, just like the actual veterans on the Lakers. When in reality, what was going on was that the kids were showing up on a nightly basis and playing through all of the noise. And it was the vets who were taking shits nightly on the team, right? Taking nights off and playing like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope when there are stakes. So let's start here with the first narrative that I think we're going to get, I think, right from the get-go. And there's going to be truth to it. It's, holy crap, LeBron is still really good. Right. What's the line from Mark Twain? Rumors of my death were vastly overstated, or something like that. Right. Rumors of my demise. It might be demise. But whatever it is, all we've been hearing, all LeBron has been hearing from talking heads all summer has been, does he actually have it? Does he have one more haymaker left in him? If he does have that one more haymaker, what are the chances that it lands and he gets to kind of bounce back from a disappointing season last year, right? Is he going to be healthy enough? Is his body going to be ready if he does need to take over, right? Those are questions I've asked. So I will cop to some of that. But I do think we are going, especially early, because again, as I've said on numerous occasions on the show, this is the healthiest, this is the most rested LeBron James has ever been. Healthiest, okay, that might be a stretch because obviously he was younger once upon a time. But this is the most rested that LeBron James has ever been. And as a result, you know, you combine that amount of rest that he has under his belt, you combine that with everything that he's been hearing, and you combine those things with the light schedule that the Lakers open up the season with, and I think right from the get-go, we're going to hear, oh, yeah, that's right, LeBron's still really good, right? LeBron is still in his prime. He is still a cyborg. And maybe he isn't as physically imposing as he was back in the, you know, early to mid-2000s or whatever. But he is still that dude. So, or not the early, but the mid to late 2000s into the 2010s. Like he might not be that physically imposing where he's going to jump over people, to quote Kevin Harlan, with no regard for human life. Maybe he isn't quite as capable of doing that kind of a thing, but he's still super duper skilled. He's super duper intelligent, crazy efficient, and I think we're going to get him alongside Anthony Davis to remind some folks, oh yeah, yeah, I'm that dude still. So that's going to be the first narrative I think we hear right from the get-go. I'm going to allow that to segue me into the second narrative that I think we're going to get, and it has to do with Anthony Davis, and it's going to be along the similar lines of, oh yeah, once upon a time, when he was in his mid-20s, Davis was considered one of the league's absolute best, especially not just big men, but best players around the entire NBA. I think we are going to, because he's going to be playing alongside LeBron James, Anthony Davis is also super-duper healthy and well-rested. I think you're going to be looking at one of those reminders on his part, too, of, oh, yeah. Yeah, that's why the Lakers gave up basically their entire organization and organizational future to land me. I'm going to take a quick second. When we come back, there are some specific places where I think that's going to show up and ways that that's going to play out over the course of especially the first quarter-ish of the season. So hang tight. We'll come back and we'll get to that here in a bit. Now, I'm recording this on a Wednesday night. ESPN's Top 100 has dropped all the way to, I think, like number 10 or so, number 10 or 11. We haven't heard the top 10 to this point, unless ESPN is really, really high on Danny Green. That means that Kyle Kuzma, who I believe was at 77, and then LeBron James and Anthony Davis, who are going to be in the top 10 somewhere, also, those are the only three Lakers who were listed, which, one, I disagree with because I think Danny Green should be higher than Kyle Kuzma. Two, I disagree with because that doesn't mean I would knock Kyle Kuzma completely out of the top 100. So the reason I'm bringing this up is at some point the conversation about the supporting cast, which I'll get to later in the show, but at some point the conversation about the supporting cast is going to switch, I would imagine, if the Lakers have success early on in the year. And it's going to switch on the backs of, holy crap, LeBron James is still one of the best players on the face of the planet. Holy crap, Anthony Davis has somehow taken a step forward himself and has started actually making teammates better in ways that he wasn't able to in New Orleans, and holy crap, maybe we completely underrated the Lakers supporting cast and Danny Green being the top guy among the supporting cast who is being undersold right now. Maybe he takes a step back and doesn't shoot the insane 47, 48, whatever it was, percent from 3-point range that he shot last year. But, you know, do I think he'll drop from 48 to 37? I don't think so. So I really think that you're going to get a swing on the supporting cast in terms of the conversation about them. But to get back to Anthony Davis, that's been the big knock on him to this point, has been, he's obviously insanely talented. He's obviously one of the most talented bigs that the league has ever seen. Why then hasn't he won? Why didn't the New Orleans Pelicans have more success on a more regular basis while he was there? And now the actual answer, and the pretty easy answer here, is his best teammate was Drew Holiday, which I captain the Drew Holiday bandwagon. But he is no, Drew Holiday is no LeBron James. their third best player on those teams was maybe Julius Randle last year, who I love Julius Randle as much as anybody, but he has some holes in his game. Maybe you're really high on Nico Belichick, right? Or I forget the Belichick. It's the Italian Patriots coach. But my point is basically that there hasn't been a bona fide third best player on those teams, and therefore they struggled as a result of it, right? They spent way too much money in cap and draft capital to be able to get Omer Asik. They made other moves to get to mediocrity, to rush into mediocrity rather than play things out a little bit more intelligently and patiently and see if you can take better advantage of Anthony Davis's rookie contract years. They did not do that, and the organization struggled to the point where they cleaned house recently, and David Griffin is now, you know, manning the ship while they go into the Zion Williamson era. So that's why, you know, I would imagine that's where the conversation is going to start from. And as a result of where that conversation is going to start from, the expectation for Anthony Davis this year is going to be, okay, so now that you are alongside LeBron James, let's see you actually, you know, get the Lakers to where we expect superstars to get their teams to. And I really think he's going to be capable of that. And Pete and I talked yesterday about, you know, him playing it with bench units and doing that kind of a thing. And if that is the direction that they go in, can he show some creative chops? Can he flash abilities as a passer that he hasn't shown to this point? Not that he's a bad passer, but he, you know, it's a relative weakness compared to the rest of his game. And I want to see if he can actually do some creative stuff to help at least mitigate against needing Rajon Rondo out there with those second units, right? So that's good. It's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. Speaking of Rajon Rondo, my next narrative on here is going to be, are the players going to, you know, are the players going to be running the ship here? Are they going to be, you know, are the team politics going to guide everything that the Lakers do? And will that be something that is so obvious that the narrative starts spinning about, does Frank Vogel have any control? Is it Frank Vogel or is it Jason Kidd, right? That's another one of my narratives here down the line, so I'll just combine it with what I'm talking about right now. But look, there is value in having coaches. Like, anybody who says that just any coach could get, you know, LeBron could get just any coach to the NBA Finals, they're just dumb. It's a dumb take. Coaching matters. Eric Spoelstra mattered. Tyronn Lue mattered back in the day. Phil Jackson might have his, whatever it is, 13 rings or whatever insane number he has, because he had Shaq and Kobe and Michael and Pippen, but those guys also didn't do too much winning without him, right? So at some point, the Lakers are going to need their coaching staff to actually assume the type of responsibility that comes with managing egos and rotations and all of the things that the Lakers are going to need. And you know, I mentioned Rajon Rondo. Look, we had the quote from Anthony Davis the other day where he said something along the lines of, "I have Rajon Rondo back as my point guard, and he's really excited to play there with Rondo." And at some point, we know how that's going to end, but how quickly does it end? And does it end quickly enough so that the Lakers can start to figure out their rotation? And are people going to, you know, look, will the other talking heads who cover this team call it out for what it is, the more traditional voices? They had no problem criticizing Luke Walton on occasion. They had no problem criticizing players for being immature with Byron Scott. So we've heard them have criticism on both sides of this equation so far. But are they going to be willing to go there with Frank Vogel and Jason Kidd and LeBron James and Anthony Davis here, right? Is that going to be something that gets talked about in a more honest fashion than you sometimes see LeBron James spoken with? The an honest tone that you don't always hear from the people who need access from him. It'll be fascinating to watch that. So that's kind of one of the narratives that I'm really watching here is how quickly do we get to the point where, oh yeah, this is just the Los Angeles clutchers. And LeBron James is the pseudo head coach and the GM and all of those things. And yes, I understand he's a superstar and NBA superstars have that going for them. But if it goes too far in that direction, you start to worry about not having the type of leadership that all of the best, all of the championship teams have benefited from their head coach. Let's take another second here. When we come back, I'm going to run through a few last narratives here to fit. And again, the ones that we've talked about, I think the you know, players running things and all of that, that has the most likeliness, that the highest likeliness of kind of getting away from everybody, just because it's so intangible. But when we come back, I want to talk about some narratives that, you know, even while they might sound kind of ridiculous, there might be some truth to them. So we'll come back to that here in a bit. So Pete and I agreed yesterday that the absolute top factor in deciding how good the Lakers are going to be, that's going to be their health. And are they going to be healthy enough to compete at the level that they have to be able to compete to continue to remain in that championship conversation that I hope that they remain in, as I said yesterday, from start to finish. If the Lakers, however, do have some of the same injury problems that they had last year, where it's not just like DeMarcus Cousins, it looks like his body was just going to give out on him, right? That's just like how that was probably going to go. JaVale McGee's pneumonia last year, there's no way to predict that kind of a thing, right? Even Brandon Ingram's blood clot thing, no way to predict that, to predict or prevent that. It's just that random, that freak of an event. That you just don't know how to really cope with it. But LeBron James's groin issue, like they got so frustrated with how the Lakers handled that message that it's at one point they, meaning Clutch and the rest of LeBron's camp, came out and said, no, we're actually going to be out for the next three, I forget the number of weeks more, but we'll just say X number of weeks more than was previously thought, right? Lonzo Ball was day to day, it felt like, for half of the season. And you can go on down the line with guys who got hurt. The extent of their injury was reported or announced in a really foggy manner, and people got frustrated because it felt like those guys were taking forever to come back when, Lonzo had a grade 3 ankle sprain. Grade 3 ankle sprains take up to 12 weeks to come back from. And had they been up front with, yeah, it'll just be 12 weeks, it's a grade 3 ankle sprain, he's lucky to have not needed surgery. Well, if that's the way you handle that conversation, then people aren't so frustrated when you get to the, I think they went so optimistically as like 4 to 6 weeks, which is like half the usual documented recovery time for a grade 3 ankle sprain. So are they going to handle that better? They brought in Judy Sato, who is one of the most respected physical therapists in the entire field. One thing I'm interested to see is, like, did she, keep up with the way that the field has adapted and evolved since she was working with Kobe and with the Lakers back in the day. My guess would be, yes, she has. As I said, she is one of the best physical therapists to have ever physical therapied, right? So, but are the Lakers going to handle, because eventually you are going to get bumps and bruises. Like, eventually, you know, somebody is going to be dinged up. Kyle Kuzma right now is dealing with some stuff, and that's one of the things that I'm going to watch, keep a really close eye on, is how they purvey the information on his recovery time to the rest of everybody else. I do also believe that the NBA is going to crack down on this quite a bit more than they have in years past because of the gambling presence that is going to be new this year compared to years past. So we'll see if some of this is kind of brought on from on high, brought down from on high. But, you know, if it isn't, I would like to see the Lakers handle this better. And if they don't, I want to see them kind of called out on it a little bit more than to further extent than they were last year. I don't want the same old this year from in that respect. And, you know, how that conversation goes, even without being able to know what's actually going on behind the scenes, there is a trend there that if they pick up on that trend from last year, well, that's a pretty easy thing to notice. And I would like to, you know, I'd like it to be called out. And you know, whether or not it does is going to go a long way in keeping people as informed on the Lakers as they can be this year. So let's go to the next narrative here. And it's probably the one that you will only start to see if the season really starts going poorly is, all right, the conversation surrounding Anthony Davis's free agency to be. He could opt out of his contract. He will probably opt out of his contract at the end of this next season. If you start to get whispers of, oh, I'm looking over here and I'm looking over there and you know, maybe this relationship with maybe I just got really sick of Taco Tuesday, and as a result, you know, what does that do for the relationship and the chemistry throughout the Lakers organization? The Lakers have bent over backwards for Davis to this point. Rajon Rondo was on the team. DeMarcus Cousins was brought in. It was the right call at that time, but he has been kept around largely, I would imagine, in part because of his relationship with his friendship with Anthony Davis. Davis is not being expected to play a ton of the five. The Lakers gave up a ton to merely bring in Davis the way that they did over the summer, right? And tanked their season last year to large extents because of the way that trade debacle went down with him in the first place, right? So the Lakers have done everything that they can to make and keep him happy to this point. But, you know, if those frustrations arise, I'm interested to see, you know, how that is handled and how that is talked about. Because on one hand, there are some frustrations that he had in New Orleans that any superstar would have in any market, right? But given the way that he drug his own name through the mud to get to the Lakers and some of the demands and the tone with which he's spoken about being, you know, his presence as a Laker, well, if he turns around and is immediately unhappy all over again, you're going to get some frustration shown out from somewhere, whether it's with the fan base, whether it's with leaks and reports from his teammates, whether it's leaks and reports from higher-ups in the Lakers organization, right? And how that is discussed and how all of that goes down is going to be fascinating to watch. I hope we don't get any of it. And honestly, you know, I told you guys that I would try to predict the likeliness of some of this, some of these narratives. This is on the lower end of what I consider likely, because for everything that I say in terms of Davis himself, but also because of the way that I think this Lakers season is going to play out. So I think we're going to avoid this one altogether. I sure as hell hope so. But as soon as things start going poorly, you can bet your ass that some of those teams around the league are going to leak, you know, to whoever they have to leak to. You know, Anthony Davis is you know, he showed a little interest in us once upon a time, and we were initially on that list of his back when he was demanding to be traded. So, you know, things could go a little sideways here because those teams have inherent reason to do so. They benefit from any drama that surrounds the Lakers. So that's going to be interesting to watch, even while we know, you know, potentially where we might, even while we potentially know where that might be coming from. The last of my narratives here, I kind of alluded to Kuzma back in previous things, but this feels like a make or break season for Kuzma. Right, that's the way that the narrative is going to go here. Is you're gonna hear right from the get go with him, you know, the Lakers are really banking on this guy to take a man sized leap forward, heading into this third season of his, and we're going to know, or we're going to talk about, you know, kind of right from the get go, how that's going and how we think that that's going to go, and which side of that coin he falls on is going to, in my opinion, go a long way in helping to decide how the rest of the season goes. Look, how LeBron James plays, how Anthony Davis plays, those are going to be the two top factors. If we were to divvy up a pie chart, they would grab the lion's share of that pie chart. In terms of deciding how the Lakers do this season. But if you were to look elsewhere across this roster, it's Danny Green and it's Kyle Kuzma who are the third and fourth best players on this team. And, you know, given the NBA is a lot more open than it has been in years past, but that's because a lot of these teams decided to opt for depth over star power and star power alone. So the Lakers, you know, they do have the star power. They have the best two player combination in the NBA this year, but they're still going to need depth. And if you get to player number four and those questions already start, you know, kind of billowing up to the surface in terms of what he can actually provide, that's not a very deep team. I think there's reason to be optimistic with Kuzma. I just don't think he can shoot as poorly as he did did last year from three. Even while I think the Lakers are kind of unrealistic in terms of what his ceiling might be, I hope they saw how, you know, kind of forcing him into a role he might not be ready for affected his season last year, and as a result might be more realistic in finding a role for him and trying to let him flourish in that role better than they did last year. Look, I just think flat out Frank Vogel is a better head coach than Luke Walton. I just think that's a flat out objective truth here, and I think one of the guys who are really going to feel that the most are going to be Kyle Kuzma. So we'll see how that goes. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. This is, you know, a bit of a different approach to things, predicting narratives and caring about narratives that haven't even kind of come to fruition. I can understand why you'd kind of roll your eyes at doing that, but it's nice to be prepared. It's nice to be prepared, and we've been doing this for long enough now where we can kind of see some of this stuff coming, and that should help. You know, if we start to get some of these narratives that aren't as true, we can kind of roll our eyes and move on and focus on some of the more pervasive truths that we care about with this Lakers team. Have a great rest of your day. We'll be back at it tomorrow. Pete and I will be back at it tomorrow, and we're going to go on the second half of his idea on how we want to, or on this Lakers season as a whole. So be prepared for that. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.